Hi, I'm Dominic Patton.
And I'm Pete Hammond.
And this is the Deadline Podcast TV Talk.
Today we're going to be discussing the Emmy contenders for Best Actress in a Limited Series or TV Movie. Plus, you're going to hear my interview with Richard Madden from Bodyguard and Dominic's interview with Bob Odenkirk from Better Call Saul at our annual Emmy Contenders event.
But before we get there, as Peter said, we're going to talk about Best Actress in a Limited Series or TV Movie. What's interesting is last year, of course, winner was Regina King for 7 Seconds, who then won an Oscar for being in Beale Street.
After winning Emmys the previous 2 years, too. I mean, there's nothing she doesn't win lately.
Which is fortunate she's not eligible this year because she's so fantastic.
Right.
Fortunate for people who might be competing against her because they might actually have a chance.
Yeah.
Along with Regina, none of the nominees from this year are eligible, actually. But there are a number of heavy hitters going to be definitely nominated, and many of them, one of them for sure, is going to win among a cast of equals in many different ways.
Yeah.
So, unlike a lot of times when we talk about this, Pete, several people who I know that you think could win are actually probably on the list.
Yes, they really are on the list. And you know, the front runner coming into this has to be Patricia Arquette for Escape at Dannemora, because she's already won the Golden Globe, the SAG Award, and the Critics' Choice Award in the earlier television awards when this limited series came out and was seen, and she just swept everything. And she's extraordinary. I mean, she put on 40 pounds for this. She's wearing brown contact lenses, which she's never worn before. She had prosthetic teeth put in, which is very difficult. And she transformed herself. But it's the performance in playing this real-life person, Tilly Mitchell, Joyce Mitchell, who helped these two prisoners escape after supposedly having sex with them and all of that.
What do you mean supposedly? She's
well,
in jail for
she
it.
She says
dude.
She didn't, the real person, you know, so I you know.
I mean, I guess so. You know, as the person who handles most of Deadline's legal coverage, you know, many, many times when I write about court filings or cases, I have to use the word alleged.
That's what?
Once you've been convicted and go to jail for it and remain behind bars for it, the words alleged do start to slip out of the sentence.
That's it. Actually, I was talking to Patricia Arquette, and she mentioned that she did and chose not to meet with her, even if she would have met with her, because she says she's very litigious, number one, and she tends to tell the story from her own point of view, so you don't know what the truth is. Patricia Arquette said, I'm trying to get at the truth of the matter here in other ways, and she really did, and it's a critically acclaimed performance. She tied.
And she's also probably going to be, she's going to be submitted as a supporting actress for Who Loves the Act.
For the act,
yeah.
And so she's all over the place right now, and that's another transformative
now,
performance.
Now, this is interesting, too, because in this category, Joey King will definitely be nominated. I think definitely will be nominated.
Oh, yeah. It's got to be awkward for her going against her. And she loves Joey King. She talks so highly of her. But it does appear that they will definitely be competing against
each other. I think whoever wins, they should on stage just throw down dice. It's the only way to say it. But then, see, you've got people. You've got Amy Adams for HBO's
Sharp Objects.
Well,
they did throw down dice at the Critics' Choice Awards. They won together, Patricia Arquette and Amy Adams. They tied. That shows how close this could be.
Yeah.
Amy Adams is wonderful in Sharp Objects, but she sat at most of these award shows losing to Patricia Arquette so far this year.
Well, and it'll be very, you know, this year to look at. And, of course, you've got Michelle Williams for Fawzi Verdon.
She's so brilliant as Gwen Verdon. You think you're watching Gwen Verdon. There is no end to the talent of Michelle Williams. Everything I've seen
her
in.
That's incredibly unbiased of you, isn't it?
I'm just telling you, she. Well, watch out for Michelle Williams here. Because,
well, that's the thing about this show. I mean, of course, Bob Fosse being the famous director, award-winning director of Cabaret and all that jazz. And, of course, Gwen Verdon being his wife, but also one of the greatest talents to ever be on Broadway. And let's be honest, the person who basically did co-direct Cabaret with him and many of his other works as well and never received the credit.
Yeah.
Sam Rockwell as Bob Fosse, Michelle Williams here as Gwen. You know, these are roles almost constructed for award season recognition.
Yeah. Well.
And in this, I just don't see how she doesn't make the cut.
Yeah, I don't either.
To that, here's the thing, though. So if we talk about Patricia Arquette, we talk about Amy Adams, right? We talk about Michelle Williams. We're now down to only a couple of slots
Joey
left.
King.
Well, okay, and Joey King. So now we're down to one slot left.
Maybe two.
Okay, so who could be that?
Well, you know what? Television stars sometimes are recognized here because TV voters like their own. And in this case, you've got a couple of them. Juliana Margulies, back in the hot zone, is very well liked by her peers here. And this is another true story, another true character that she's playing here, real person, and very good in the hot zone. So I wouldn't count her out. Or Connie Britton, that's a really harrowing show, Dirty John, and what she
very
goes
much
through.
So. Very much
very
so.
Transformative. She goes through with this guy who she doesn't know who he is. She's well liked too, has had numerous Emmy nominations, as has Juliana Margulies.
One person I think who's been overlooked, and again, I think it's sometimes because of where things are shown, PBS, is Ruth Wilson, who many of us know from The Affair or from Luther, and other things like this.
Broadway.
She really stepped out of almost everything else in her career to concentrate on Miss Wilson, primarily because the story that is told in that of multiple families and betrayal and what have you is of her family.
Yeah.
And it's
an amazing...
That's
why it's called Mrs. Wilson.
Well, I don't think a lot of people realize that.
I had no idea. Yeah. I thought it was a typo when I actually looked
at it. Or that
it
was just like, that just happens to be the name of the character, right? And I was like, actor's name is Kennedy, and it's a film called The Kennedys, right? But no, and I'm not going to go into the plot too much, but it is very personal, and it is very, very, very revealing of her own family. And unfortunately, I don't think it has received the attention it should, because she is magnificent in it.
Yeah.
Absolutely magnificent. And I wonder if the hope that she will have beyond being recognized for her sheer talent in this is people will recognize her from other stuff, like Luther and The Affair, and kind of feel like, oh, well, that's someone I like. But I really think that she, unfortunately, has been overlooked so far. I mean, Emmy season is early, so there's much further to go. And maybe that spotlight will turn on her. It certainly should, because Miss Wilson is a show that people should not have missed first time round. And if they did, they should definitely check it out now.
Well, you really got a heavyweight lineup here. Emma Stone in Maniac. How about her? You know, now, she's a big name.
But what's interesting here is this year, Sarah Paulson is ineligible for this category.
Because she played the same role previously.
But also because American Horror Story and American Crime Story are, American Horror Story is now considered a drama series because what was once an anthology, or in this case a limited series, they just can't keep perpetuating the myth there. I mean, it's clear, it's the same show.
And they're all back playing same characters from the first season. Yeah. And so that is the real problem, and they can't do that and claim they're an anthology. So that has taken her out of the running here.
It's interesting because I think, you know, as we talk so much about this era of peak TV, there's now a maturation process happening where the Academy and the system itself is now kind of catching up to the realities, and where things were like, oh, it's just a limited series. It's like, but it's back for a second season. Like, you know, Big Lies is one of those, right? It's like that's going to have to change completely come next year when season two will be eligible for the Emmys.
But... Well, you know, I mean, that's when does that air? Big Little Lies.
Later this spring, early this summer.
Okay, so we have to wait all that time to see
wait all that time to see Meryl to see Meryl
to
Street
see
take
Meryl
on
Street.
So
you got the line there, Dominic. You stole my line.
That's
but there's
what it
one
is.
Other person like Meryl Streep here we haven't talked about, and that is Helen the Great. Helen Mirren playing Catherine the Great.
You saved that line. I've been waiting to say that.
Helen,
just remember, before you praise Helen Mirren too much, my friend, she is in the Fast and the Furious spinoff Hobbs and Shaw.
She's
so remember
everything.
That.
You know, she can do action. That's why people love her. She can do everything and then go after Netflix at CinemaCon like she did and just kept that crowd captivated, just like she does TV viewers, movie viewers. I think she's great.
And Pete Hammond.
Yes.
Clearly.
I love Helen Mirren. I think she's great. I
don't think Helen Mirren... I mean, look, there's always the Brit pick. There always is.
Yeah.
And that's just the way the Emmys and many other things work. I don't think her performance of Catherine the Great on HBO, I just don't think it had the traction for this. I think if she gets out there and campaigns hard, people love it. I mean, it's true. I love Helen Mirren. You love Helen Mirren. My grandmother loves Helen Mirren. Everyone loves Helen Mirren. But I don't feel like... I feel like they love Helen Mirren.
Yeah.
I don't feel like they're like, oh, Catherine the Great? Oh, no. I mean,
I know
the story.
Maybe they didn't
want...
You know, they don't watch...
Then again, I don't know how many people watch HBO Go or HBO Now, and there's a lot of feedback that can come out of that.
Yeah, I think HBO is going to have a very good year this year. They've got so much interesting stuff. They're back, you know, obviously with Game of Thrones and Veep and all the series here, and they've got a lot of good kind of movie stuff. And, you know, I don't know.
I
Sharp Objects. Amy Adams is so good in that. You know, I just hope they give her due. I'm sick of Amy Adams sitting at these award shows and not getting up there to make a speech. You know, after a while, they've just 6 nominations now for Oscars, and she has not won. And now she goes into television. Somebody like Amy Adams, well, I'm just doing television, so I'm obviously going to win an Emmy. And then what if she doesn't? That's a shame, you know? And I love Amy Adams. So, Amy, I'm rooting for you,
too. You love Amy Adams. You love Michelle Williams. You love Helen
I love
Mirren.
Patricia
a lot
Arquette.
Of love there, my
I
friend.
Do.
A lot
I
love.
I, all
but
of these...
what about Bodyguard and Richard Madden?
Oh, yeah. Well, he's not in this category.
But no,
yeah.
but you had a very good chat with him.
I did. Richard Madden is the hottest thing going right now. Between Bodyguard, he's in the movie Rocket Man. We talked about all of this when I sat down with him. And, of course, we talked about Game of Thrones, where he famously was done in a few seasons ago. And he had choice things to say about that as well.
Are you surprised at the success that Bodyguard had, even in its first season? When it ran in England, It became one of the biggest rating successes, just like an out-of-the-box phenomenon.
I know, it still doesn't sound real when you say it, but it's kind of strange, especially when it went from, because it was on weekly in Britain first, so kind of when the ratings were going up every week, you were like, oh, this should crash and burn at some point, and it didn't, and you're like, oh, right, okay, it's done okay. So it's kind of been thrilling and exciting. You know, a lot of people worked really hard on it, so I'm just thrilled that we're getting the payoff of people watching it.
Well, it's very cinematic in its own way, too. I mean, right from the opening of that, you're on the edge of your seat. Most TV series don't grab you that fast. Mm-hmm. And this one, with that whole terrorism thing that you're doing, was just beautifully made. I don't know, there was something about the pacing, The way it was. Your performance with the actress playing the terrorist who was about to blow herself and everybody else up was quite amazing. I can't imagine the intensity that took, too.
It was intense. And she's a wonderful, wonderful actress. Thank God we had such a good kind of dynamic together. And it's tough. It's a cold 20-minute open. You know, it's like a hard, cold open, but kind of anxiety-inducing. But luckily, we shot it at the end of everything. There was a scheduling thing. So that's the last thing we shot of anything. So by then, you were kind of run down, exhausted, and anxious enough as it was, I think that kind of all fed in and helped everyone kind of make this dynamic that we got.
Yeah. It's a really complex character, David Budd is, I think, and must be really rewarding to play somebody like that. Absolutely. You know, the audience can look at him in many different ways and not be quite sure what they're seeing.
Absolutely. I think that's how I looked at him as well. I think that's what made him so interesting when I first read it, that you don't know if he's good or bad or what is his moral compass, where it lies. There's all these gray zones and they constantly change. So I think that's what makes it quite exciting to watch is not knowing what he's going to do next. You can't really predict him.
Yeah, extraordinary in all the ways of this series, even though it's only, you know, it's limited. Did you have any intention when you started it that this would go beyond what you were doing, or did you just assume this was a beginning, middle, and end, and that you're done with this character?
I assumed that it was a beginning, middle, and end, and then kind of delved into it. I'm still kind of living with him, and hopefully we're going to go on and make another series of it, which is what we're hoping to do. But it's one of those things that, you know, during shooting of it, you didn't realize, you know, what was going on with this man, but kind of the further we got, the deeper we got into this character, and he becomes really fascinating. Jed kind of gave me a runway to kind of make this character, and we really kind of flew with it, I think.
Were you sad to die on Game of Thrones?
I was sad to leave my family behind. Yeah. I spend more time with my on-screen mother than I do my own mother, or my on-screen friends than your own friends. This is your family, you know? Yeah. So that was it, but I was ready to go. I always knew I'd be leaving the show at the end of season three, and that's 5 years of my life, which is another interesting thing as an actor of how long is too long to be playing a part. I'm looking at some of my friends that are 10 years in now, and I'm going, wow, you've really changed over the show and growing as an actor. And I was ready to kind of say goodbye after three seasons and say, thank you, I'll have a brilliant death and I'll go and explore other things.
It was a very good death.
Thanks so much.
And from Richard Madden in Bodyguard, I take someone who probably is going to, in future seasons, need a bodyguard, and certainly did in Breaking Bad, which of course is the great Bob Odenkirk. Better Call Saul is getting closer and closer to actually bumping heads with the canon of Breaking Bad. And I spoke to Bob about that. And when his recognition that he was really a part of something special dawned on him at our Contenders Emmys event earlier this year.
I'm going to give away something. Okay? Bob said something to me that I'm blown away about. You talked about how you felt like a guest on Breaking Bad for most of your life. And to me, like, you were Breaking Bad for many of us. I mean, of course there were the guys, but what you did with Saul Goodman transformed that show. And you've done it here with this a show that, you know, it's I mean, they say, like, man, there's like one or two. There's like Godfather 1 and Godfather 2 are as good as each other.
Yeah, yeah.
you kind of done it with this one.
Well, I mean, I think, like, thank you, for
you can
the
applause
compliment.
For that.
I appreciate
Better call
the compliment. I really do. It's huge because Breaking Bad was a kind of a perfect show and so wonderfully done. And on top of the fact that it capitalized on it, literally, it fit the moment in technology. That's crazy to create a show with all those cliffhangers. And then it comes at a time when people discover streaming and have the technology to suddenly do the thing they'd never been able to do. Just when you're in your second or third season, was where Breaking Bad really took off. But yeah, I felt like a guest on Breaking Bad. That core group, Aaron, Anna, Betsy,
Brian,
and Dean. That to me was a show, and I was guesting and popping in, and nobody knew how long it would last. I was asked to do 3 or 4 episodes, and I could only do 3 because I was doing How I Met Your Mother on the week of their 4th, and because I was doing How I Met Your Mother, they had to invent the character of Mike to handle the plot choice they needed to make in Breaking Bad. So Mike wouldn't have existed if I hadn't played a character on How I Met Your Mother.
So it all is thank you, CBS programmers.
Yes, yeah, so thank you. All credit to CBS for Better Call Saul. What? Okay.
Now, how are you feeling? Now, you know, you guys have had a tremendous run over 4 seasons. The show has given a whole new look at this world. But you're getting very close, like very close now. Now the name change has happened.
Yeah.
You're getting close to being the beginning of Breaking Bad.
Well, I can't wait.
And we see in the movie.
I can't wait to have Jimmy and Saul interacting with Lalo and Nacho. And this is not a spoiler because I don't know what happens in the upcoming season. I only know the first episode, which I've read. But I've got to tell you, my gut is this is gonna become a very quick snowball effect of these characters and these stories coming together. I can't promise, but my gut is this whole thing is just gonna very quickly come together because we have a lot of story to tell. You know, in that first episode with Saul where Walter White and Jesse Pinkman have him on his knees in front of the freshly dug grave and he's saying, is this about Lalo? Is this Nacho? And we have to get all that logic has to make sense, and so I can just feel it bubbling up, and I can't wait for this season. And I've been amazed at the audience's willingness to watch Jimmy flounder a bit in his desperation to please Chuck, and now his desire will be to, you know, obviously he wants to stay connected to Kim. He loves Kim. And in some ways, they're a great couple, but I think everybody who knows the show knows that they kind of that can't last. It just can't. They're where they're headed, it would just be too unpleasant for her. He wouldn't give a shit. He'd just be happy to be with her.
That's something you bring up, though, because this last season, you know, this was the season following the death of Michael's Chuck.
Yeah.
And that was, you know, we can all give a round of applause for Michael.
Michael McKean. So great.
But
in the
that
show.
Relationship between those siblings was so much one of the core pivots of
yes.
the series.
Yes. Oh, yes.
And you kind of had to fly solo in this season going forward. For you as an actor, having worked so much with Michael and you and Michael developing their relationships and those characters, what was that? How was the season 4 different?
Oh, season 4 was, you know, there was a lot of energy that the character, his brother died at the end of season 3, and season 4 was kind of this trying to discover, you know, how would that affect him? And he really compartmentalized it, and it kind of, I think, twisted his psyche a little bit. But also, I think he felt like he discovered something amazing about the wonders of compartmentalization. If someone who made you unhappy, in the case of Chuck, he desperately wanted to please his brother, and he just never was going to. If someone like that leaves your life in a good way or a bad way, you can just take all those feelings and stuff them in a bag and lock it in a box and throw it in the bottom of the ocean and carry on and be really upbeat and energetic, as you saw here. He's like, I know who I am now. I'm this shitty guy. It's going to be great.
Thanks for listening to the Deadline Podcast TV Talk. Now make sure you subscribe to us on iTunes, everyone, because you don't want to miss an episode, and you don't want to miss later on this year when Pete and I are going to have to eat crow about everything we got wrong.
Yes, well, maybe you will. And, of course, you can find all of our Emmy-breaking news coverage at Deadline.com.
Thanks for joining us. Talk to you soon.